Tired of the same old sports analysis? Then you need the SMQBs podcast. They're five attorneys, they're sports fanatics, and they're ready to make their case. Welcome to Sports Talk with an Edge. It's House.
Exquisite talent, but ridiculous immaturity.
Pope.
New fun, who dis?
Rooster.
The Jersey girl got bageled by Swiatek.
Milk.
God, the greed and the capitalism, let's go, come on.
And Bison.
That's fucked up, Milk. That's just fucked up.
Football's back, baby, and we're covering it right here on SMQB's episode 231, here with House, Pope, and Rooster. How you doing, buddies?
Hey, what's up, Rooster? Yeah,
licking our wounds from the weekend.
It was a great weekend. It was a great weekend.
Pope, what hat are you wearing there?
Bison predicted it, a little SMU.
Oh,
little
my
SMU
God.
Ponies.
Here we
okay.
go.
We'll get into that later. All right, we're going to start out with who you taking to the bar, House.
I think one of the hardest things to do in sports is to repeat as a champion. And it begins this week, Thursday night, and all eyes are on Mr. Jalen Hurts. The underrated, despite the fact he's been in two Super Bowls, he still does not get his flowers. Jalen, I think the season is going to be more about you than about Saquon. And let's see what you can do with the pressure of taking us back to yet another glorious Super Bowl. And here we go, boys. Jalen, let's have a drink. I'll keep it spirit free so you can perform your best. Stay healthy. Have a great season. Let's go.
Bandwagon, you're up.
Well, no surprise, but I'm taking Nick Saban to the bar. Would love to know what's going on truly with the Alabama program. Getting him outside of the context of College Game Day, where he said all is good and, you know, picked Alabama to win and have a big year and said, you know, seems like things are different, culture's different, et cetera. You know, following in the footsteps of a legend is not easy. And Kalen DeBoer clearly struggling. We'll talk about that a little bit later. I just want to know what Nick really thinks. And does he think that that the end is nigh for the dynasty, or are they going to turn it around? See what he thinks.
If you're Coach DeBoer, don't you want Satan to stay the hell out of your locker room at this point?
Yes and no. I mean, remember, a lot of those guys, Saban, recruited and brought to Alabama, and they still listen to him. But, yeah, I mean, two voices is not necessarily good for the locker room, but he's going to hover over it regardless, even if he walked away from the locker room.
I like the Roy Williams approach. He shows up as a fan and keeps out of the business of his, of the people who took over for him.
Brewster, who you got coming to the bar?
Well, you guys know how much I love the NFL draft and the prognosticators. I'm going to take a couple of rising stars in the for the draft in Fernando Mendoza, quarterback of Indiana, and Drew Aylar, quarterback of Penn State. And I want to know from them, after a few drinks in their system, if they'll tell me honestly how far up they think their stock has shot after the crappy performance this weekend by Arch Manning and Cade Klubnik.
We'll come back to that.
All right, but before we do, let's give thanks to our sponsor, Assembly. Assembly has put out the best case management software programs for litigation firms for many, many years, and now they're on the cloud with a new system called Neos. I have it. I think, Pope, you have it. Can't
I've
recommend
it
highly enough.
Bison has it.
And their
it.
Support staff is fantastic. Check them out at assemblysoftware.com. All right. Well, we covered the AFC because the NFL's back, baby, last week. Let's hit the NFC. Question, Pope, can any team, except perhaps the Lions or the Commanders, challenge the Eagles this year in the NFC?
Well, I would have said maybe not last week, but we'll talk about it more, obviously. But I think the Packers, you have to put them in that category as well. Now with an elite edge defensive talent.
Yeah, I just worry about Jordan Love and the health of his.
Sure.
Well, it's his non-throwing hand, but he just seems to, I don't know if he's there yet.
I think you also have to look at the Niners. Are they going to have a bounce back year? I mean, they went to the NFC Championship 2 years ago. You know, if they have a bounce back year, they just re-signed Brock Purdy. question mark, obviously, about CMC. We'll talk about the West, I assume. And look, the team that came on at the end of last year was the Rams. Matt Stafford's health is obviously going to determine how well they do, but they're loaded, and they just brought in Devontae Adams to go along with Puka Nuakua. So they're going to also be tough.
I don't know, man. An old man with a sore back. I'm not putting any stock in the Rams.
They do have a good backup though in Jimmy G. I mean, Jimmy G could potentially, with the talent that they have, I think they could still compete.
He's pretty fragile himself. I do think you're right though. If Jordan Love can reach his potential, the Packers are a solid playoff team. Indeed, they've knocked the Cowboys out the last two times the Cowboys were in the playoffs. So why in the world, we'll get to that later, do you trade your best player to the team that has sort of become your nemesis? Anyway, House, I know you've got an unbiased view of this. Who are you most worried about in the NFC?
Well, I'm worried about the Detroit Lions. I mean, Jahmyr Gibbs, I think, is going to get better. Their receiving core is scary. Goff is reliable. Their defense was decimated by injury coming into the playoffs last year. They were down so many people. If they're healthy and their defense plays healthy, this is all going to be about home field. Now, look, you could say the Lions were home against the Commanders, but again, their defense was really, really down. I do have a question mark about what happens to the Lions offense minus Ben Johnson. You can say what you want about when he was in that playoff game against the Commanders and his play calling, but I think he was key. And we saw a couple years ago after the Eagles lost Steichen and Gannon as their coordinators, how they slipped a little bit. Keep an eye on the Lions and what happens with their loss of Ben Johnson. In addition, it's hard to say that, you know, I let me just say this because I, you know, we don't have Bison here, but I want to say what he had to say about the Commanders, because I am, of course, afraid of the Commanders. I mean, it was a surprise to everybody. This is Bison's take. You know, he's from DC, the Commanders guy. He knows them inside out. Bison says the Commanders take a step back this year, but still make the playoffs. And Jaden is not the reason for any backslide, but three key players, Debo. What does he have left in the tank? Chris Rodriguez, can he be a breakthrough RB1? Trey Amos, did Washington finally draft a legit corner? Here's the most interesting point that he makes, which I kind of forgot about last year. Washington, he says, won't convert 87% of fourth down attempts this season and won't win seven games on the last play from scrimmage. And I remembered a couple of them, and of course the Hail Jaden and all that other stuff, but the reason why Washington does not scare me as much is because I don't think Debo's the answer. I still think they have some problems on defense. I do think some defenses will have learned Jaden. And Bison's right. I mean, they won a lot of games on the last play of the game. And they have a bullseye on them this year. They're not like a darling. They are a legit threat, and teams are going to be coming for them. But
they're also old. You know how old they are?
They're old.
They're the oldest team in 13 years in the NFL.
They are. And here's the team that I'm a little worried about, which is the Bucs. You know, Milk will love to tell our listeners, if he was on, that Baker threw for 42 touchdowns last year. They have a healthy Godwin. They have just
They upgraded their receiving.
They upgraded the receivers, and they have a timeless Mike Evans who just came off a record-setting year. Here's what he says. The Bucs go 11-6 and win the South again. The Panthers will be much better this year and have at least one big upset in them. Their defense still sucks, though. I would have us at 12-5, but too many injuries in the first month. I am scared of the Bucs. I think their defense is good. Their defense is disciplined. I think Baker's turned into a smart quarterback who can rely on Mike Evans. So I think the NFC is where it's at this year. I think they're levels above. Yes, there's the Ravens and the Bills and the Chiefs that we talked about last week. But I really think that the Lions and the Eagles and the Commanders and the Bucks, could all be capable of winning the Super Bowl out of the NFC. And every year there's surprises. And as we say on this preview every single year, a lot of it comes down to luck and health. You know, if the Eagles sustain a big injury, and I just want to talk about the Eagles for a second, because, you know, we're talking about who's going to challenge them. Howie Roseman is just, he's ridiculous what he does with this team, including, you know, watch this year, watch Jihad Campbell. I don't know how he fell to the Eagles, but he has been a wrecking ball in the preseason. He's got a motor, and they already had Zach Baum. They already had, you know, a solid, solid linebacker core, which the Eagles don't normally have.
I think I had him ranked as my top linebacker when we were talking about the draft last year.
And there is a kid that we'll talk about later who's undrafted, unrecognized, no invites, no anything. Went to Tarleton State, who just upset Army this past weekend, an FCS team, a guy named Darius Cooper, who's made the team as a wide receiver. I think he might even leapfrog Jahan Dotson as a wide receiver three. You're going to see some plays this year where you're like, who's this Cooper guy? What Howie does is crazy. The fact that they might have even upgraded since last year is scary, but they have a tough schedule. And they've got that return to the Super Bowl monkey on their back. And so that's really tough.
So, House, when's the last time that there was a repeat division champion in the East?
Well, I think we went through this on text. I think it's something like, what, is it 20 years?
21
years. Is it 21
years? The Eagles repeated in 04.
It seems like a pretty easy task this year.
You would think.
Yep. You know speaking of new talent, new young talent, and the Commanders' need for it, I'm surprised Bison didn't mention their other rookie running back, Jacory Kroski-Merritt.
Bill.
Who, between him and Rodriguez, I think they have two potential home run hitters in the backfield, which could be exciting to see. It's all going to come down to the line.
They need it. I really think they need a run game. And, you know, I think Jaden was pretty smart about when he ran last year. They need to protect him. I mean, he's the franchise. They gotta keep. I'm interested to see how Jaden develops this year as a passer. Bison and I have this argument. He'd argue with me if he were on here. I think he was for the most part, a dump to the right passer last year. I'd like to see him develop. Well, not as an Eagles fan, but as a football fan, I'd like to see him develop the middle of the field and the long ball. If he adds that to his arsenal, then he really, really is the next one. Very, very dangerous. So we'll see.
Yep.
Well, since everybody else has been talking about their team, let me read you the four things I wrote down to talk about the Cowboys.
Why do we want to talk about the Cowboys? We're talking about
running
who's going to challenge the
sucks.
Eagles.
Dak not mobile, injury prone, can't stop the run, can't rush the quarterback. That's about it.
Yeah, I would add, I'm going to add to your list there, House, of Tampa, the Lions, and the Bucks. The Packers and like Pope said, the 49ers with caveats for each. With the Packers, it's all Jordan Love. With the Niners, it's the health of CMC. And for them to find somebody early in the season to throw the ball to other than Ricky Pearsall, because who else is there right now besides Kittle? You know, they've lost Debo. If Juwan Jennings is hurt, who are they going to throw the ball to? But if they can figure out that and CMC stays healthy, they're a good team.
No, Kittle's got to stay healthy. CMC's got to stay healthy. For both the Rams and the 49ers, I believe Shanahan and McVay overcome a lot of their shortcomings. I think McVay will work around that injury and come up with three-step drops, quick little passes to Puka, let him go.
Yeah,
I think that if I'm Shanahan, if CMC is healthy, you gotta really, really run that offense through him again and try to, again, dumps in the backfield to CMC, run the ball through him. You got to cover for this lack of wide receiver issue. And Kittle's had injury problems too. For those two teams to make it, they're going to have their coaching overcome those shortcomings,
yep.
Like I said.
Yep. I really like Matthew Stafford. I root for him. At his age, though, man, he is just one hit away from retiring.
Are you guys buying or selling on J.J. McCarthy and being able to take Justin Jefferson to his full potential? Selling?
Pope? Selling.
Yeah.
I was selling based on lack of any evidence, but I keep hearing really good things about him from people in the know, you know, people on the Vikings, former players, et cetera. So we'll see. I mean, we don't have much to go on. He didn't throw the ball much in college and didn't play last year, so who knows? But the people in the system love him.
Are we looking at Cousins or Penix as the Falcons QB?
Penix
for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's been some talk about moving Cousins.
Falcons are loaded on offense. If Penix can be, you know, the quarterback they hope he is, they're going to be tough. Bijan Robinson, an elite running back, and then you got Landon and Mooney, receivers. So they're going to be tough.
I think Penix is one of the more interesting stories for me. I've seen how he plays. He looks so good in college. And even during the combine and all that, he throws a beautiful ball. And the team played a whole lot. Even Kyle Pitts played a whole lot better when he took over from Cousins last year at the end of the year. So we'll see. It's going to be fun to watch them. I'm surprised Milk's not a little more nervous about the Falcons.
Who were the 7 playoff teams last year for the NFC?
Well,
Eagles, Lions, Niners, Bucks, Packers, Rams, and Commanders. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
So, and that's what I have again for this year. You know, who do you guys see as maybe the one or two teams that could surprise and knock out, you know, the 7 teams that seem pretty firm right now for playoff slots?
Well, it's hard to imagine anybody else other than the Bucks comes out of the NFC South. So I think you can scratch those off. I would say that the NFC North has, to me, the biggest volatility besides the Lions. It would not surprise me if the Bears improve a little bit. I know what we saw with silly throws from Caleb Williams in preseason, but Ben Johnson's upgrade, their defense is very solid. Like, the Bears could get around 500 and maybe make some noise. I think the Vikings, if JJ's good, all of a sudden the Vikings become relevant. You know, I don't think we see anything from the Cowboys or the Giants. I don't think we see anything from I'd be really surprised if the Seahawks sneak in somewhere.
Or Cardinals.
I think the Cardinals could win 11 games and get into the playoffs.
What?
That's a pipe dream.
Their quarterback is Kyler Murray.
They need Marvin Harrison to step up big time this year. But they're not going to compete. I mean, that's why I think it's interesting when you look at the NFC overall. You know, 30,000 level, it's like there is definitely a tier of top teams and the next tier, you know, of wild card type teams. And then there's the rest. And I agree. I think Vikings and Bears probably have maybe Falcons if they can put it together. Those are the only 3 teams I think potentially could bust into that next tier.
Well, now the one that can surprise, and I don't expect it to happen, but it's interesting. I think you're going to see some pressure come off the Cowboys now this year. I don't expect them to surprise. I think they have a lot of weaknesses. I think they're going to be hurt by this. I do. But it's just everyone's written them off. Everyone's written Dak off. They've written their defense off. They've written their running backs off. You never know. You never know if they can get a couple wins against the Giants, if they sneak one out of the Commanders or the Eagles, you Jets. Just never know if the yeah.
But so the front of their schedule is obviously the opportunity. The back end is brutal. It's like playoff team after playoff team after playoff team. So, you know, I just don't even if the Cowboys somehow got to be like 3-3 when the first part of the season, they're gonna still finish 6-11, 7-10. Best case scenario.
Either if Dak is healthy and he's not an idiot, and I know that's a big if, you're going to see either Pickens or Lamb go off this year. Either Lamb
put some points on the board.
Either Lamb because they, you know, they go single coverage against both of them and Lamb superior, or they double cover Lamb and Pickens becomes who we thought he was, and he really is like one of the sneaky pickups of the offseason. Those receivers could go off, and it's a passing league. If those receivers do well and Dak's not an idiot, they could surprise.
Well, I'm selling. I don't know about you, Rooster.
Me too.
Yeah, I think the Giants are going to upset some people this year, but they're not going to have a winning record.
So what about Jackson Dart? When are we going to see him start?
Game four.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
The guys, I don't know. I just don't think you can hide talent.
By the way, and we're going to get to picks soon, but the NFC starts off, since we're on the NFC preview, with some really, really important first game in division matchups, beginning with Thursday and the Cowboys-Eagles. Like, really, if the Cowboys shock the world, if they shock the world, there's a big change in the balance of the NFC East. The Lions and the Packers play
huge game
one.
Yeah,
the 49ers play at the Seahawks on week one. Like, these are some big in division. Even the Giants and Commanders, if the Giants scare the Commanders in week one because the Commanders are still getting their legs under them for the season, like, these are huge in-game. Bucks at Falcons. Like, if the Falcons play strong at home in week one, there are some huge NFC implications.
Vikings-Bears is the Monday night game.
Week one. I love it.
Yeah,
love
it. It's great. It's great. All right. Do we need to talk any more about this Micah Parsons trade?
Well, are we doing picks for the NFC or not?
Yeah, well, let's just talk for a second about this trade. Because I think first of all, I think we got to let Pope get some steam off. Rooster, I think you and I need to weigh in on it too. But so
when we start punching.
Is this going to be like Luca part two?
And is it worse than Luca? Is it worse?
No, it's not worse. I mean, if you want to, you know, it's kind of like people have been saying, hey, Jerry said, you know, Nico, hold my beer. No, it's not worse. Because Luka wasn't asking to be traded. There wasn't an issue with whether they were going to, you know, give him the max, although I guess in their head there was. Nobody else had that issue. It was just a total shock, one of those where were you when this happened moments. Micah, I felt like the relationship with him and Jerry had been deteriorating for quite a while, and Micah was acting out, you know, in the last preseason game. He didn't put a jersey on. He laid on the medical table the whole time. His body language was awful. It was clear that something was brewing. I mean, you know, Jerry could have re-signed him and last year for probably around $40, $41 million. And you know, stupid-ass Jerry, and I'm not going to punch him until later, but this is just the way that he operates. But talk about the practical effects of the trade. I mean, Dallas gave up the last 3 years, the runner-up for Defensive Player of the Year last year. Last year, he was third. Generational talent, 26 years old, their best player on their team. And what they got was two first-rounders and Kenny Clark, who's a, you know, three-time Pro Bowler, defensive tackle.
Years
but
ago.
He's also almost 30 years old. And, you know, Jerry, in his own mind, you know, he thinks he's like Howie Roseman. He thinks he's a Wheeler Dealer GM, and he's still living on the Herschel Walker trade, as you know, thinking that he did that. And of course, that's on the Netflix show now, talking about, you know, who gets the credit for that. But Jerry is still determined to run the football team and not listen to football people. Near term, Cowboys, you know, they just re-signed Deron Bland, their cornerback. With the money that they save from Micah's contract, you know, they're obviously going to be – defense is going to be tough on rushing the quarterback. They may be better now stopping the run. I don't know. And they have draft capital. They have six first-rounders in the next two drafts.
But, Pope, that gets to the question, why the Packers? Because what's the value of a first-round pick from a team like the Packers?
Well, so
– it's going to be – mid-20s
it will,
at
it will.
Best.
And, you know, but look, if you have...
Why not trade them to a team like the, you know, the Panthers or the Titans and get some high
picks?
Well,
this is, again, part of Jerry's, you know, ungenius is that the Packers came with the best offer. There weren't teams running up to them offering them multiple first-rounders. So, you know, he went with the best offer. And
one
so,
first-rounder from a team like the Giants or... What's the worst team in football right now? The
Saints.
One first rounder from the Saints is worth more than two worth first rounders from the Packers.
I don't know. I'm not sure about that. Look, they're going to package those first rounders too. They have, like I said, they have six in the next two drafts. Look, I think the Cowboys got the best deal they could have got under the circumstances at the time that they made the trade. I mean, you realize that the agent for Micah went to Jerry the week before the trade and said, you know, we'd like to talk about an extension. And Jerry's response was, well, you're going to be playing the fifth year or we're going to be trading you. There was no discussion at that point. So, you know, the line was drawn in the sand, and I think they did the best that they could for the limited opportunities that were available. I'm not happy about it.
Pope, I want to understand whether it's a narrative or what you believe really to be the truth. Did this thing really come down to 4 versus 5 years? I mean, where Jerry says it has to be 5 and Parsons says it has to be 4, did it come down to that?
Jerry thought he had a deal. Remember, Jerry thought he had a deal in April, a handshake deal, or March, whenever it was, for 5 years. And Micah's team was like, no, there was never any deal. And then that became a sticking point. But, you know, it got personal. And Jerry's thin-skinned, and it got personal. And so I don't know if the 4 or 5 years was ultimately the biggest deal. I mean, you know, they never offered him more than $40 million or right around $40 million. And he ended up getting $47.5 million. He got a $188 million contract, which is the highest non-quarterback contract in NFL history. So they were never going to offer that. And again, I'm fading into the punch too, but Jerry hamstrung himself when he'd signed Dak for $60 million. He signed a quarterback who's in his 30s, never, you know, proven himself in the playoffs, was already, even before he ripped his hamstring off his bone, not the most mobile quarterback. But when he did that and then he re-signed CD at $34 million, he was hamstrung. He could not offer Micah $47.5 million. He would have tied up half the salary cap with three players.
So, look, take your pick. Reggie White.
I was going to say the Packers just got another Reggie White.
Yeah. Reggie White, Bruce Smith, mm-hmm. Charles Haley, Brian Urlacher. You're talking about legends of the defense. And the Cowboys.
You're forgetting the best one of all.
Brian. Lawrence Taylor. The Cowboys have had legends on the offensive side. They had Tutal Jones and some other people on the defense. You know,
Bob Lilly,
but Leroy they Jones. Had an opportunity.
Long time ago,
they had an opportunity to have the blue star on one of the greatest defensive players, if he stays healthy, of all time. I don't get it. This would be like the Cowboys now have. If you're all about ego and all this other stuff, the Cowboys now have one of the top whatever greatest players of all time. They didn't make it happen. All of that said, I don't think this trade is as bad for the Cowboys as people say, or as good for the Packers as people say. I think he is awesome. I think he's incredible. This talk about all of a sudden they're now the prohibitive Super Bowl favorites is crazy town. That's crazy town. Like, their defense just got a whole hell of a lot better. They still have to prove the game through Jordan Love on the other side of the ball. And the Cowboys, yeah, Parsons was special. He tore people apart on defense. The Cowboys had way bigger problems on defense than Micah Parsons. Like, way bigger problems.
Can't stop the run.
Can't stop the run. They got roasted in the secondary in certain games in the playoffs. That was not a Parsons issue. So I think
Parsons also disappeared in the playoffs. That was one of the raps on him as well.
I think the Cowboys lose this trade. I do grade it as an F for them, but I don't think this sends them into 3-14, and I don't think this sends the Packers to 14-3.
No, and you know, one thing that hadn't really been discussed much is you know, Parsons had back issues, and it just came out today, you know, that he has an L4-5 issue, and they're watching it. I think. You know, watch what $188 million and a change of scenery will do for the back. I think he'll be fine. I mean, if he's limited in the first couple games, that's because he's not in game shape. But
I think there's a little gaslighting going on there from the Jerry Jones camp, though. I mean, they released that information today along with information that the entire team thought that Micah was arrogant and didn't like him. I'm pretty sure CeeDee Lamb was lobbying big time to keep Micah on the team.
That's my big question, is for the stars and the young players. Okay, Deron just got paid, but for the stars, the young people on Dallas, what does this whole interplay that just happened tell you about your desire to stay with this team? You know, does CeeDee Lamb say, okay, like that's really how we're committed to this team and our future in the playoffs? I'm out.
I guess the book is yet to be, you know, written on that. We'll see what happens in the next couple of years with the draft capital they have. Cowboys will have a high draft pick this year because they suck. What do they do with that? You know, they got to get a quarterback to replace Dak. The next two drafts, especially 27, are considered, you know, potentially some of the highest talent to come out in decades in the NFL. So let's see what happens. I don't know if you can grade it final, but I give Cowboys temporary a D-.
On Dak, just one last thing. He's no Jackson Dart. All right, let's move on to college football, like baby.
Rooster, hey, Rooster, before we get to college football, why don't you tell our listeners about our little tradition in our picks for the NFL weekly, and let's get down to our picks.
Let's get it going.
So House came up with this name, Plaxico Locks. Never really understood it.
Well, House explained it.
One of the greatest wide receivers in the history of the New York Football Giants.
With one of the dumbest criminal penalties of all time.
Shooting himself in the leg at a club one night. Okay, who hasn't done that? So,
been a minute.
So we make picks every week based on the score line. And you know, we've had some trouble in past years, but last year we pulled it together and had some pretty good records.
Who's our defending champ, Pope?
I think I am last year. Pope,
really?
The year before, yeah.
Okay, but we've had winning records the last couple of years after years of being terrible.
We've pulled it together.
Thomas. Yeah,
we've pulled it together, and this year we're adding some college picks to it, I guess. So, hey, what do you have to add to that, House? How'd you come up with Plaxico Locks?
Well, I mean, the guy got locked up, and so why not honor his misery and his misfortune? The Plaxico Locks of the Week, by the way, there is a sponsorship opportunity out there for all of you. Folks that are very interested in putting your name, Jerry Jones style, on the Plaxico Locks of the Week. We opened
Pepsi. Yes, indeed. Here, now, I just want to get the rules straight for this year because they've changed a little over the years. Can more than one person, more than one SMQB, pick the same team?
I would like to avoid that. We've had years where we're having like three or four of us pick the same game.
Yeah.
I think I'd like to avoid that if we can. Don't you guys think that?
The listener's an opportunity to win more money.
That's right.
All right. Okay.
So I don't think you guys are going to take any of the picks that I have in from Milk and Bison and myself.
All right. All right. Let's start with Milk.
So Milk has the New England Patriots. We haven't bet on them in a while. He has the New England Patriots giving 2.5. I believe they are at home against the Las Vegas Raiders. So Milk is down for the Pats -2.5. And Mr. Bison, Nace, unfortunately, took the Eagles -7.5 at home this Thursday.
Ooh. That's an easy pick.
Now, by the way, you can take the other side of that game if you guys we can take the same game. And for example, if you wanted the Cowboys +7.5, you could do that.
All right. Pope, you're next.
Well, that was going to be mine, but I had a backup thinking that's a possibility. The Bengals got off to a horrendous start last year, and they cannot do that again. And I think they'll be much more ready for the beginning of the season. So I like the Bengals giving 5.5 at Cleveland, which is a disaster show.
That was my pick. All right, House, you go.
I'll go, but Cleveland rarely loses games that big, and they still have a good defense. I'm sorry to do this to one Patrick Milk Michler, but I think the Bucs are leaps and bounds better than the Falcons, and despite the fact that it's a division game on the road, I like the Bucs -2.5. It's a win-win for me. Either I win the bet or I get to rip on Milk. So Bucks minus 2.5 at the Falcons is my bet.
All right. All right.
Rooster, you only get one.
I know. I've got three that I like still, even though Pope took the Bengals. I've got three that I like. I'm going Cardinals minus 6.5 at the Saints.
I like that.
Boy, okay. Two just shitty teams.
We'll wait on our college picks.
Yeah.
Until we've finished up our college wrap up. So let's get into that now with the almighty SEC Pope Father.
What a weekend.
Yeah. The SEC, thank God LSU, you know, came through against Clemson because it was a disaster in the big games. I mean, you know, they won some other games like Tennessee.
Well, like the NFL, Syracuse. Like the first week of the NFL, as House was talking about, just some great scheduling for the viewers this weekend. Some big teams.
Sure.
You know, teeing off against each other in week one. Go ahead, Pope.
I mean, the game that everybody was talking about was number one versus number two, which has never happened in the first game of the year. And all the promise and expectations heaped upon Arch Manning. And, you know, did he shit the bed? You could argue that he did. Was his first game going into the defending national champions home against probably the best defense in college with Caleb Downs, the best defensive player in college? Was that a good place for him to start his career? Probably not. But his mechanics were off. Sark didn't make the adjustments. Texas's defense played well enough to win. They played phenomenal. This game was decided really on two fourth and goals. One, Ohio State handed the ball off to their running back and converted. The other, Sark went for it on a quarterback sneak with Manning and didn't convert. Seven-point difference.
Really weird call.
Yeah. Well, in that series, Sark ran Manning three times in a row. Well, he ran him two times in a row, then did running back, then did back to Manning. So three out of the four inside the 10-yard line was a Manning, you know, keeper, which I didn't understand at all. He never really opened up. And, you know, look, Sark lost the semifinals against Ohio State last year, college football playoff. Couldn't convert inside the five. And Jack Sawyer, you know, had disrupted and had that return for a touchdown that sealed it for Ohio State. So you could argue that Sark has a problem beating the big teams, Ohio State, Georgia. His record is 0-4 last couple years. So they need to lick their wounds, but I think they'll be okay. Their defense is elite. They are really good. They shut down Jeremiah Smith, and had a couple drops. But, I mean, they played, obviously, really well. Talk about Alabama. Even though that was the, you know, not a top 10 matchup because Florida State was coming off a horrific 2-10 last year, this is not the same Florida State team. We can talk about that in a minute, about the transfer portal and how that has literally transformed some of the Southern Florida teams. But you had a transfer quarterback in Tommy Castellanos who before the game, way before the game, talked about how, well, Alabama doesn't have Nick Saban, so they don't concern me anymore. They're not the same Alabama. And he got a lot of criticism for that. Well, he not only talked the talk, but he walked the walk. His, athleticism, his ability to escape in the pass as well as, you know, run, really pushed the Florida State offense. Alabama got shoved off the line on both sides of the ball. They looked soft. There were a number of players who, you know, looked like they were loafing. It was a disaster from every front if you looked at it from a Bama perspective. And we'll talk about, you know, where do they go from here. LSU won in the Battle of Death Valleys. Great game. Nussmeier outdueled Klubnik. And, you know, does he go now to the head of the Heisman race potentially? And then
– look at the stats, though, Pope. They both threw for 230
they
yards.
They did. But
Klubnik looked bad when it counted, I guess.
Nussmeier had a touchdown and no interceptions, and Klubnik didn't have either. So he had an interception.
Okay, but Pope, you're before we move on from the LSU and SEC games, I want to go back to Bama for a second because obviously your focus and your knowledge is intimate as it relates to Bama. But let's talk for a second about what we're seeing here from FSU. This is a team that was 2-10 last year, and we were starting to wonder all that whining the year before when they got screwed out of it because their quarterback goes down. They should have had the opportunity after going 12-0, blah, blah, blah. And that was all a joke because they were really 2-10. And then they effectively used the transfer portal. So what did we see here? Do we see a Bama team that just played really crappy, or have we seen an elite team in FSU? What do we see from this FSU team?
Well, I mean, I would argue that it says more about FSU than Bama, this game. It shows you that FSU is ready to come back to premier football status. I mean, they were 13-0 2 years ago and missed the college football playoff because of their quarterback injury. But, you know, Mike Norvell is a good coach. Seemed like he rebounded, and I mean, this is something that sticks in my craw forever from Alabama perspective. But you know, Gus Malzahn, the OC, his trickeration has always, even with Nick for Alabama, has always confounded Alabama. And you know, those Auburn teams would just drive us nuts. Well, it was seeing Gus Malzahn on the sideline and knowing that. You know, they probably underestimated his ability to impact the game and with Castellanos really affect, you know, Alabama in a way that we hadn't expected. So I think Florida State, look, they're in the ACC. So, I mean, the ACC arguably, although after Miami's win, talk about that. I mean, you know, the ACC, they have to play Clemson. They have to play Miami. They have to play Florida. But you know, I think Florida State is going to be their top 10 for most of the year.
Castellanos had some moves
that
reminded me of a sturdier Jaden Daniel.
Well, it was interesting. I had not been aware of all of his kind of smack talk and, you know, bravado before that game.
Yeah.
And he backed it off. He backed it up. I mean, he pissed off Saban. He pissed off a number of people, and he backed it up. So it'll be interesting to see how that team gets behind him now, because that's what leaders are capable of doing.
Playing with a lot of confidence and a lot of swagger.
Milk would, if he was with us right now, would be talking about brilliant use of the transfer portal to just retool without skipping a beat, both FSU and Miami. All of a sudden, they bring in blue chip quarterbacks.
Yeah, Carson,
who fit right in and just hit the ground running.
Guys, we talked about it in the college football preview. This year, I mean, I guess we'll still see how SEC cannibalizes itself and who rises to the top. But I still believe it goes through Big Ten again this year. If you didn't see any of the play from Underwood, he is the real deal at Michigan. He is the real deal. And Penn State is scary good. They played Nevada, whatever. But you got Penn State, Ohio State, and Michigan that Oregon. I think, and Oregon.
Don't forget,
I mean,
Oregon.
All of these teams are going to be vying for at least one or two or three of 12 playoff spots. And, you know, all the focus and the glamour was on SEC games this past weekend. But don't forget about what the Big Ten is capable of doing this year.
Well, Clemson looked like they were in that game the whole game, and that game could have gone either way.
Yeah.
If I'm a fan of Alabama, Notre Dame, and Texas, I'm a little worried right now, particularly Alabama. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I'm worried about Alabama. I'm really not worried about Texas. I think they'll be okay. I mean, it's not like they got blown out. I mean, they played well. The defense played well enough to win, and a couple plays go the other way, and, you know, it's a tie game or Texas wins. It's a long year. That will not be held against them. Now, that being said, they can't lose, you know, any games like against A&M or other opponents that are, you know, considered inferior. They need to play well in the SEC, but I think you'll see a different Texas team. They have a couple cupcakes ahead, and then they play Florida in the Swamp on October 4th. I think you'll see a different Arch Manning. That is going to be a must-see TV game.
I'd be surprised if Alabama and Notre Dame, either of those teams, crack the top five again this year. I thought Notre Dame looked terrible. Maybe even definitely a step back from last year.
Yeah, runner-up national champion last year.
Yeah, the play calling was bad. The execution was bad.
You're worried about the quarterback?
Quarterback didn't look great. He wasn't the reason they lost that game, though. He played his ass off. He just, I think, is a B talent. Who comes – when you're Notre Dame and you have arguably the best running back in college football – and you come out and don't use the guy maybe once or twice in the whole first quarter? What's with that?
Put that on Marcus Freeman?
I think so. I just thought it was a terrible game plan. They looked flat, uninspired. I was just bored watching that game. And I like Notre Dame.
Guys, there were, because one of those spots in the playoff is going to go to a group of five team, there were some really interesting developments in the group of five this past weekend. There's one preseason ranked team from the group of five in Boise State, and they got pantsed by USF. And look out. I mean, this week, USF plays Florida, and Florida should be scared. I don't think Florida's going to lose that game, but USF is a
don't
real...
Don't underestimate them.
Do not underestimate them. Army was a threat as a group of five team. And they got like shocked by Tarleton State from the FCS. My school, Tulane, put an absolute beatdown on Northwestern. Now, I know Northwestern is the Vanderbilt of the, or who I don't know, maybe someone's worse now than Vanderbilt because they were okay last year, but they're the worst probably of the Big Ten. But for an AAC team to really put it to a Big Ten team and the way in which they did with an incredible defense, like an incredible defensive showing. They made Preston Stone look like a junior varsity quarterback. And that's a guy that's a pretty big-time quarterback, was a pretty desirable transfer portal player. Tulane, UNLV, USF, those are the ones that are smelling nice right now from the non-Power Four conferences.
Speaking about bad coaching, did you guys see the Colorado-Georgia State game?
Bits and pieces. What happened, Rooster?
Well, first of all, the Colorado started the transfer from Liberty, Caden Salter, who, you know, in the last 3 years is tied, I think, with quarterback from LSU for the most touchdowns in the country. That guy looks like he's got all the tools, but he is a terrible game manager. Georgia Tech turned the ball over their maybe three out of their first possessions, and Colorado turned the first one into a touchdown and was looking like they were going to blow the game wide open. On the next possession after a turnover, they couldn't get the offense going. Pat Shurmur, former NFL coach, including for the Giants, I just his game calling I thought was terrible. Never called a pass over the middle of the field. And anyway, it was third and maybe eight or something like that. And Salter sees part for him. The guy's a hell of a runner. He could have run for 15 yards before anyone touched him. And he decides to heave the ball into the end zone, thinking that he's got a guy open. High risk, low reward play. You know, he's on the run. This doesn't get the first down. That the game just started to sputter for them there. But not only – so the offensive play calling by Pat Shurmur was bad. The defense couldn't stop the run, even though they have these more NFL coaches on the defensive staff. And then at the end of the game, they're a one-score game. They've got like a minute 30 to go in the game and two timeouts, and Deion Sanders does not use a timeout at all. Mm. Clock runs out, game over. I mean, I just think they're all about the flash and the name recognition.
Are you down on
Prime?
They're
just not well coached. They're not well coached.
Down on Prime?
They finally have a running game. They finally have an offensive line. And they have a much improved defense. Same result, though. End of the game, they don't get it done. So, yeah, I'm down on Prime. I think the coaching staff needs to look within and get better. All right. So let me just hit up another one of our, before we get to our locks, our college locks, and I'll give you a chance, House, to explain the name of this. But let me hit up one of our other sponsors, Supio. Supio.com is a leader in the field of AI software for litigation firms, helping you take your documents and turn them into things like medical summaries, deposition outlines, etc. Check them out at supio.com, leader in the area of legal AI software. House, what is a Matier lock?
Well, this is the Matier Matters. let's not forget that the current quarterback of Oklahoma, John Matier, famously posted on his Venmo some of his various college bets, including USC versus UCLA, openly, publicly. He has denied it and said it was just a joke, but we want to honor him. We're okay with you betting, Matier. We're going to also, we've got our locks. You can join in with us. Just write us at SMQB mailbag. We'd love to hear from you if you're not playing. And on that note, I've got three picks because I've got Milk's pick, I've got Bison's pick, I've got my pick. And sorry, Mr. Matier, but I'm taking Michigan +5.5 at Oklahoma. I like Michigan. I think the SEC might be a little down. This is my Big Ten versus the SEC. So I got Michigan +5.5 at Oklahoma. I've got Milk wants to get it in right at the start of the week. He has had it with the circus. He said the circus ends tonight. TCU is going to wax UNC, and he's got TCU -3.5.
Whoa.
Apparently, he's laying a little bit of the boys' college education on this one tonight. And then also, I've got Baylor, Bison with Baylor +3.5, which I think is, what, SMU? Baylor?
Yes.
Yes. So he's got Baylor +3.5. So, guys, I need your college picks.
After coming off that great game against Auburn.
Just run those down again for me, House, so we can keep track of this.
Yeah, I got House is Michigan +5.5 at Oklahoma. Milk is TCU -3.5 versus North Carolina. And Nace is Bison is Baylor +3.5 against SMU.
TCU's giving 3.5, right?
Yes.
I'm going to go West Virginia -2.5 at Ohio.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Well, House, I had the Michigan game identified as well, because that's really the only big game after all these big games last weekend. The big game next weekend is Michigan at OU. But then I had some backups. I had the bounce back games. So I'm going to pick one of those. The three bounce back games are San Jose State getting 37.5 at UT, Troy getting 33.5 at Clemson, and University of Louisiana Monroe getting 35.5 at Alabama. I feel sorry for all three of those schools because there's going to be a lot of venom coming out. But I do think that UT will cover 37.5 against San Jose State. I think Sark is going to be out to prove a point. And I think even though that's the highest spread, I take UT giving 37.5.
Wow. That would be something if you get that one.
All right. So, our third sponsor this evening is Digital Law Marketing. If you listen to this show, you've heard about Digital Law Marketing. In fact, they have done the SMQB's website. If you're tired of your website, maybe looking good but not having any juice, check out digitallawmarketing.com. And within a year, I guarantee you will see your organic originations go through the roof. Digitallawmarketing.com. All right, fellas. At this point, we're going to hit Punchable Face of the Week.
It's this week's Punchable Face.
House, you've got two, I think.
I have two.
This is going to be a long punch session.
Well, oh, wow. Well, I'll keep mine pretty brief, but I hope somebody doesn't also have this one about this guy, Peter Cicerek, the CEO of the Polish paving company Drogbruk.
Pretty sure nobody else has that one.
Have to cross that one off.
Damn. So it was after.
What have you been reading, the Staten Island News or something?
Did you guys not see this U.S. Open match?
Oh yeah, that's the asshole who stole the hat.
Yeah, the asshole that stole the hat from a kid.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I mean, come on. The kids in the front row. I don't even remember which player. It was a top player. Pope, maybe you remember who was signing. It was one of the very top players who was signing hats and balls. And all the kids are in the front row. And the guy signs the kids, you know, oversized tennis balls they do these days. And then while he's trying to sign someone else's tennis ball, he also takes his hat off to give to the same kid. And some older guy reaches over and grabs the hat away from the kid.
That's a hard punch.
And so, you know, now his company's being lit up on review sites and this guy cannot hide. And frankly, he deserves it. Come on, bro. Like, the kid was like almost crying right away. Just give the hat back to him. That was absurd. You get a punch also. Sorry if I'm not pronouncing this right, but everybody can go flame Peter Cheshirik. And this paving company, Drogbrook.
The player was Camille Mazrak.
Yeah. So, like, ridiculous. I don't care who the player is. Like, leave the
kid
alone.
It's still a player who had a hat that a kid wanted.
Okay. You guys have probably heard this story, which just was shocking to me. This is the 20th anniversary of Katrina hitting New Orleans. And that impacted, of course, an entire state, an entire community, an entire sports community, the Saints, Tulane, everybody. And at that time, Tulane played pretty much its entire season on the road. It was incredibly difficult for college athletes. Most of the students had to enroll in different colleges. And at the time, they were just trying to, they couldn't even really have an equipment team throw things together. And what happened when they played 20 years ago was they played with a green helmet without even a decal of Tulane. It was a green helmet and a white jersey. So they show up to play their first game against Northwestern, and they showed up with the plain green helmet without the decal, but they had requested to have a white jersey. And I don't know what the whole rules were about all of this, about who gets to pick what, but apparently Northwestern had a right, essentially a veto right, as to whether or not to allow Tulane to play that game in a white jersey, and Northwestern elected no. And they knew the reason too. They said, hey, we want to wear our white jerseys. It's 20th anniversary of Katrina. Northwestern said, no, thanks. We're going to wear our whites. And apparently this, you know, for whatever you want to believe about bulletin board, this really fueled Tulane, fueled John Sumrall, who said in his press conference, hey, I'm not trying to really totally throw shade at Northwestern, but don't disrespect the city of New Orleans. That really fueled us up. And if 23-3 wasn't bad enough, here's a punch to you, Northwestern. God hopes that your city, your university, your campus, your students never get affected by a tragedy like Katrina. And if you do, wear whatever the hell uniform you want to, and for not permitting Tulane to wear their whites, you get a massive uppercut from this guy.
That was inexcusable.
Crazy. Yeah.
All right, Pope.
All right. I have one punch, and I'm going to punch somebody so hard it's going to hit two people.
Wow.
I'm punching Jerry, and the glancing blow is going to smack Nico right in the face because he just deserves it. We've given away in the last 8 months, this city has lost two generational talents that are 26 years old. First Luca, and then Micah. Jerry Jones, You know what the term fuck around and find out is. Well, that's exactly what he did with Micah. For the last year and a half, he's been stringing him along. Micah wanted an extension last year. Didn't want it. Jerry didn't want to entertain discussions. Jerry thought he had some kind of handshake deal without the agent, and then he refused to talk to the agent. He could have traded Micah before the draft this year and gotten more capital than he did. You know, you signed Dak to $60 million and CeeDee to $34. You're hamstringing yourself. You're just not a fucking football guy. Give it up. Jesus. Punch. And Nico, you got hit again.
You need to ice your fist there, Pope. All right. All right. Our final sponsor this evening is our friend, Milk, and his company, Injury Board. Check them out at injuryboard.org, the premier networking firm for plaintiffs' trial lawyers. Who's got a lasso? Anyone? I've got one.
Let's hear it.
There was a brave rescue this past week by a former NFL linebacker. A guy played for the Broncos on their two Super Bowl winning teams in the 90s named Glenn Cadrez. He's driving his truck on the highway in California, and he sees a BMW M4 go flying over a concrete divider and crash into oncoming traffic, hitting a Nissan. Everybody in the Nissan, I think, was killed. The BMW burst into flames, so Cadreau and stops, and he and another bystander pull out the driver of this BMW seconds before the car explodes and save his life. It takes a lot of courage. Most people would have driven on, unfortunately, in this day and age.
For sure.
He stopped. He did the right thing, risked his own life, and saved a life. So, cheers to you, buddy. Good work. You get the lasso this week.
And I guess this is more of a lasso. I was thinking about doing a poor one out, but this is more of a lasso. It's the Lee Corso story. I'm sure you guys have been watching the last week or so. This was his last college game day, last headgear pick. He's been doing it for 30 years. Really transformed college pregame sports TV as we know it. Started with ESPN back in 1987 doing these. He had a fairly nondescript coaching career prior to that at Florida State and Indiana, but he really hit his stride on college game day. And his headgear picks, as you guys know, were everybody looked forward to him every week. And so this was his last one. He's 90 years old, and part of the lasso was, I don't know if you guys saw it, went viral, was the Southwest Airlines, agent who recognized Corso was getting on his flight from Orlando to Indianapolis or to Columbus, and recognized him and talked about, how he was so beloved by everybody in the ESPN community and flying on Southwest. But he picked Ohio State, which was his 46th time to pick, more than any other team. Ohio State, they obviously won, but he went 6-0 on his final week picking, including upsets by Florida State, LSU, and Miami.
Others on the crew kind of sneered at him when he made particularly the FSU pick.
For sure.
And they were like, oh, yeah, that's cute, old man.
Yeah. He said, it's my school. I can't go against him. Yeah. So game day is going to go on, and, it'll morph now without Corso. But it was a good way to go out, and I really enjoyed, you guys probably saw him all, the honors and tributes to him and the way that they did it.
Fantastic. It was great.
Let's go to buzzer beaters.
I've got one. Luke Donald filled out his European Ryder Cup team today with captain picks. They were pretty predictable. Lowry, Rahm, Sepp Straka, Victor Hovland, Åberg, and Fitzpatrick. That now means he has 11 of the 12 players that fleeced our ass in Italy in 2023. He's got, like I said last week, a stout team. Now, Keegan Bradley did not pick himself. Which was, I think, a little bit of a surprise, but once he explained why, I guess it made sense. It's hard to play and be all in as captain, et cetera. But other than the fact that we're playing at Bethpage, I think the European team is going to be really tough to beat.
House.
Two quick ones. A really exciting home run race is on for the overall home run leader, Cal Raleigh. Shot out to 50, and then after a 4-home run game this past week, Kyle Schwarber is at 49. It's not quite McGuire Sosa vibes, but it's really fun watching these guys just knock it out and put a little pressure on Judge and Shohei. I don't think it's going to change the MVP ultimately, but it sure is fun to have these guys mash the ball. Secondly,
Judge is not out of that home run race either, even though he's hurt for a while. He's up to like 44.
Okay. Well, it would be fun to see him knock some out too, because this has been really fun. It's always great for baseball. Today, the transfer window closes in Premier League. The rich just got richer. Really, one of the superstars of English soccer is Alexander Isak, who was on Newcastle. And for also record-setting money, I think $180 million or something like that, U.S., Liverpool, last season's champions, signed him. So the champions get richer. There were some other decently sized moves, but that's the big one. Everyone is going to be chasing Liverpool. They beat Arsenal this past weekend, 1-0, and what is expected to be 1-2. And so everyone's chasing Liverpool and Alexander Isak now for the rest of the season.
All right, I've got a couple. One is I want to wish a happy retirement to Jeremy Lin. Back in 2012, I took my eldest son to a Knicks game at Madison Square Garden, and the Knicks were really struggling at this point. They had one star, Carmelo Anthony, and they needed a boost. And I think it was Coach D'Antonio at the time decides he's going to start his fourth string point guard, one Jeremy Lin from Harvard University, who was making so little money that he was living with a roommate, like on the guy's couch at the time. Anyway, he came in and just lit it up, and the fans went nuts. And this lasted for, you know, the rest of the season.
Lin Sanity.
To the point where the Lin Sanity was so crazy that Carmelo Anthony got jealous late in the year and was pissed off about it. The guy had the goods. He played well, played into the 2019 season, where he effectively retired from the NBA and then went to play overseas in China and Taipei. And then just this week announced he's hanging up the basketball sneakers for good. So enjoy your retirement. It was thrilling when it lasted, and it was very, very entertaining. My other one is, do you guys realize that Aroldis Chapman, the 37-year-old flame-throwing relief pitcher, apparently all he needed to do was get away from Aaron Boone, because he is freaking lighting it up for the Red Sox.
He just got re-signed, right?
He just got re-signed for a year at $13.3 million because he's got a 1.04 ERA, and with, you know, about 30 games left to go in the season, he's already got 26 saves. So what a comeback by him. He's still throwing over 100 at age 37.
Good stuff.
All right, baby, it's a wrap. Good show.
Let the NFL games begin.
Go Birds.
Can't wait.